On Monday, we read from your emails. During our program on the History of the World series, many of you wrote in with your favorite memories of the Fall Classic. Here's one more from Michael Silver of Saratoga, California. In 1988, I, a Brooklyn-born Dodgers fan, was dying to watch the series, but my girlfriend at the time reminded me that we had a dinner. At the restaurant, I slipped away to the men's room as often as I thought I could get away with it. In fact, I ran out to the car to turn on the radio and get an update. I was lucky enough to be on one of these surreptitious escapes when Kirk Gibson hit the home run. Like all other Dodgers fans, I was jubilant. I had to force myself to calm down and compose myself before returning to the table. During that same program, several of you also wrote in to correct Neil Conan about what really happened right after the 1968 World Series. Timothy Rice of Louisville, Kentucky writes, "In 1968, there were no riots in Detroit following the Tigers' World Series victory over the St. Louis Cardinals. In fact, 1968 was a time of relative healing between the races in the city after some of the nation's bloodiest race riots the previous summer." Our next email comes from the World Series and Math Bin. In the November 1971 journal Science, writes John David, there is an article about the probability of the World Series going all seven games, with the implication that there is somehow a fix, in the sense that statistically there should not be so many series going seven games. We found that article from 1971 and its author, joining us now from his office at the University of Rochester School of Medicine and Dentistry. He is William Simon. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for calling.
Dr. Simon, tell us about this article. What exactly did it say?
All right. First, let me clear up the point. It does not suggest there is a fix. Now, the probability that the series would go seven games is about 31%. However, following World War II, from 1945 to 1971, it in fact went seven games 55% of the time.
What inspired you to write this article?
When getting my hair cut in Boston, the barber told me that he'd made a bet that the series would go seven games. And he'd bet him even money. And I said that didn't sound like a very good bet to me, that it should be about a 2-to-1 bet. And the next time I came back to see the barber, he handed me the scissors and said, "From now on, you're the barber and I'm the mathematician." And then in 1971, we noticed that it had happened again. And at that point, we sat down and tabulated what had happened since the end of World War II. From 1905 to 1944, it comes out pretty close to what is statistically expected.
Now, do you still see the same pattern continuing since you first wrote these articles?
No. It abruptly stopped then. Hmm. From 1974 on, the pattern vanishes.
Let's talk about the series now. The 2003 series is tied at one game apiece.
Okay.
So does that make it more or less likely that one of the others is going to win, the Yankees or the Marlins, will need a seven?
It makes it more likely that it will become a seven-game series. It goes at this point from the 31% before the series started to about 37% now. But I can't tell you which team is going to win. I can tell you which team I'd rather have win.
Which team would you rather have win?
Oh, the Marlins, of course.
Oh, well.
After all, those Yankees just beat my Red Sox.
Yeah, that's true, but I'm a Yankee fan. I'm sorry to admit
Oh, I apologize.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Dr. Simon.
You're very welcome. Thank you for calling.
Okay. William Simon is a professor of biochemistry and biophysics at the University of Rochester. And we end with one more favorite World Series memory for Jason McGrath of Rochester, New York. The year was 1992, the teams Toronto and Atlanta. Jason was sitting in the barracks at Camp Pendleton and watching the Marine Color Guard marching out at Fulton County Stadium with the Canadian flag flying upside down. "We were all Northerners," he writes, "and surprised that nobody caught that mistake." Well, for Jason and all our Canadian listeners, we can't right that wrong of long ago, but in small consolation, we end the show with the regimental band of the Coldstream Guards playing the Canadian national anthem, "O Canada." Wait a second. Hold on. I think that's backwards. If you have questions you feel weren't addressed, comments, or a correction to this program, we want to hear from you. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Please be sure to include the topic of the show in the subject line. Tell us where you're writing from, and if necessary, give us some guidance on how to pronounce your name. Talk of the Nation is produced by Susan Lund, Setsuko Sato, Justine Kennan, and Megan Williams. Chad Campbell directs the program. Brendan Banaszak is our production assistant, with help this week from Joel Riddle. Molly Messick and Shannon Mullen are the TOTN interns. Our technical director is Kevin Waite. He gets help from Vince Muse. Ellen Silva is our senior editor. Sue Goodwin is our senior producer. And the executive producer of Talk of the Nation is Leith Bishop. Neil Conan will be back tomorrow. In Washington, I'm Lynn Neary, NPR News.